Welcome to Accounting High.
I have an extremely long list of things that the bookkeeper can be doing now that is going to earn them respect in the eyes of the tax preparer, because they are saving that tax preparer a lot of headache during an extremely stressful time of year.
So what you're proposing is, in order to bridge the gap between the bookkeepers and the tax preparers, we need better communication.
It's still education, and it's still based on leveraging technology and personal relationships and bringing those together to give them something that is greater than the sum of its parts.
May I have your attention, please?
From cloud accountant CUA back to desktop accounting advisory and tech apps adopt, went solo with the rap, Scotty's still the same. Raleigh is the spot where I edutain. Like, share, connect, comment, follow this, and subscribe to our podcast. Next one we drop, cause you know we don't stop. It's 24/7 on the Accounting High Live. TikTok clips don't watch, just some shitty tax talk. Cleaning up accounting with a bucket and a mop. Then we lean back and nod, cause the class is about to start at Accounting High. Scotty, OKR.
Accounting High. Accounting High.
Oh, cow, cow, counting high, OKR.
Introducing the star of our show,
Scotty and Dancing Nancy.
We're gonna have a problem here.
Class is in session.
Yeah.
Dancing Nancy, Nancy McClelland. Thank you for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me. That was a really fresh rhyme there.
Yeah,
I got a little distracted because I was dancing around. It was good.
Yeah. I saw it. Well, you're the Dancing Nancy. I got another little fresh tune to play for your intro here.
Could I have been Dancing Nancy?
Could I have been a Dancing Nancy? I could have been a Dancing Nancy. Nancy, we have a lot of similarities, and our students are going to learn what those are today as
I
we talk about
it. I love the lyrics of that
song.
Could I have been anyone other than me? I mean, that's a beautiful message. It's a great song.
No, you couldn't be anyone other than you. You are you. Listeners, you are you. Don't try to be anyone else. That's going to be part of the point of today's episode.
Yeah.
Be yourself 100%. And
I love that you dug that song up for me.
Since we've met. Oh, yeah. Well, it's not hard to dig that song up. It's one of my favorites by Dave Matthews Band. And when you introduced yourself to me, this was last year. Bridging the Gap conference, came up to me and said, "You're somebody that I was told I need to know, and I'm the dancing accountant." That's how you introduced yourself. And I said, "What? The dancing accountant? This sounds awesome. Tell me the story about how you became the dancing accountant, Nancy."
I'm glad you asked, because it's a favorite story of mine.
Please.
I do dance with four different performing troupes, the Janes, which is a 1960s style go-go dancing troupe, which is definitely where I got the name, the dancing accountant. My company had been called Nancy McClelland LLC, like super, super inspired name there. And
so you got the name Nancy by birth, but the dancing came a little bit later.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I had been running Nancy McClelland LLC for, I don't know, probably 10 years at that point. And I had, when I was turning 40, I was going through something that I think a lot of people do during big epic changes, you know, or dates on the calendar that are really significant for us societally.
Milestones.
And I know you know about milestones also. We'll hear about the comparison between your milestone moments and mine in a bit, I hope. But I was coming up upon 40, and I was thinking about the things that I thought I would have accomplished by 40 that I hadn't accomplished yet. And one of them was I had always wanted to be a go-go dancer. When I say go-go dancing, I mean like 1960s style. These boots are made for walk-in, like Nancy Sinatra era 60s go-go dancing. And my husband had bought me a pair of go-go boots, and I would dance around the apartment, but not in public. I wouldn't go out. It was something that I thought was maybe silly because I was too old, because I hadn't had formal training. I was talking with a friend of mine, you know, about the looming big 4-0, and said that I had always wanted to do this. And she said, well, why don't you? Sort of challenged me. And so I Googled go-go dance class Chicago, and immediately a place came up. I emailed them. They emailed back. They had a class on Monday. I went to it, and I went to class twice a week until they no longer offered it twice a week. They now only offer it once a month. And after 4 months, they invited me to join the performing troupe. And it was amazing. It was amazing. It was a dream come true. It was an accomplishment. It was terrifying, but wonderful. And I was dressed up in full costume at one point going to Unity Park, which is a park in our neighborhood that's a pro bono client of mine. They were having a really cool, like, teach little kids how to go-go dance, do the twist and the watusi and the hullabaloo. And so I show up at this event, again, full costume, tall boots, miniskirt, the whole shebang. And not one, but two clients were picnicking with their kids at the event. And I walked up and she said, look, kids, it's the dancing accountant. I immediately knew. Like, I mean, that client, she's still a client of mine. And every once in a while, she's like, she'll get a memory on Facebook of pictures from that day, and she'll send it to me. And she said, is this the day I gave you your company name? I was like, yep, that was it. That was the day. I filed the DBA papers like the next day.
Oh, so you really did change the name of the company.
Yeah.
It's always the streets that tell you your name, and you literally were on the street dancing and somebody told you your name on the street.
Technically,
like, the streets tell you
park.
Something. You don't come up with your own nickname.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the park's outside of a street. You're outside. This is awesome. Now I want our listeners to hear the story of how you became the accountant, not dancing accountant, but why become a CPA in the first place?
Well, that is a
wonderful
question.
Let's go back as far as high school if we need to.
Yeah. Oh,
that's the real meat here.
So I have always been interested in every topic imaginable. I rarely meet a topic or an opportunity to learn that I don't enjoy. I just love learning. And as a result, when I went to college, I changed majors, I think 7 times, because I loved everything. You know, everything was new and exciting. And I think I started out in poli sci. I did biological anthropology, linguistics, language acquisition was an area that I just loved. Oh my gosh, so many different topics. And then I took an intro to music history course that I just loved. And I thought, oh, I want to keep studying this stuff. This is just so good. But I had no plans to major in it. I just really enjoyed the topic. And so I kept taking classes and I kept taking classes and I kept taking classes. And the next thing you knew, I had a major. I had accidentally fulfilled distribution at the University of Michigan because I had taken so many classes on so many different topics, and I just needed a major. And the really cool thing that happened was that there was a new school for the performing arts in Ann Arbor called the Ann Arbor School for the Performing Arts that had advertised a position where they needed somebody who could teach music theory part-time and be the office manager part-time. Now, not surprisingly, I was the only person who applied for that position because it's weird. But I applied for that position, and it was in that role that I was doing their bookkeeping.
That's both sides of your brain for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Both sides of your brain you're using there.
And I loved teaching. Don't get me wrong. I still love teaching. I actually consider what I do as an accountant to be a teaching job. I really, education and consulting, personal relationships, explaining difficult topics in a way that people can understand them. I still think of myself as a teacher. But there were a lot of people that were good at teaching music theory. I went on to teach music theory at the residential college at the University of Michigan. And I taught children's music acquisition classes, music development. And I loved it all. I loved teaching. I loved working with kids of all ages. But I noticed that there were a lot of good teachers around, and there were very few people who could speak the language of the artists and the small business owners and do the accounting. That felt like a unique spot.
Which is the language of business.
Yeah, it is.
That's the language of business.
And that was where I realized, you know,
upon it, yeah, accidentally.
It was totally accidentally. It was so accidental that by the time I was done with my music degree, I knew that I wanted to be working in accounting, in business, with small businesses. And I got really lucky because from there, I ended up getting a job at a world famous violin making studio, which is an honor and a delight because then I got to indulge all of my interests. I got to work with the musicians who were buying the violins and violas and the occasional cello. I got to work with the University Musical Society. I got to work with the performers that were coming, the orchestra members that were coming to perform at the University Musical Society. And then the amazing people who worked at the violin making studio, who were the artists and scientists and makers that that they did this incredible work. And there, it was their CPA that saw in me what I did not see. And she said, you need to go to the next step. You shouldn't be just a business manager. Not that just a business manager is something that isn't an amazing thing to be. But yeah, she wanted me to go to the next step and to really full on get into accounting, tax. You know what she did? She gave me as a going away gift when I moved from Ann Arbor to Chicago, she came to my going away party at the violin making studio and she gave me my first CCH master tax guide.
What a gift. What a gift. Do you still have that?
I do. Do you still have that first tax guide? She inscribed it.
You're hard to throw away. You can't. Yeah.
I'm not going to get rid of that.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
I'm not going to get rid of that.
No.
Yeah.
So Nancy became an accidental CPA, an accidental accountant. We've heard a lot of these stories on this show at Accounting High. Most of the people didn't go to college to major in accounting because it's not sexy. You did everything but accounting. This is nothing close. Poli sci, anthropology, linguistics, music, like none of those are remotely close to finance. Like some people go into business and they want to go finance.
They aren't and they are. I would make the argument, again, going back to the teaching and the education, a lot of what we do in accounting, especially working with small business owners, a lot of what we do in accounting is educational. When we consult, we listen to their pain points, we listen to their needs, we look at the resources that we have available to help them, we set things up for them, we teach them how to read their financials. And in our case, we work with a lot of people who DIY their books. So we're teaching them how to do their own bookkeeping and then we're handling the monthly close and helping them learn how to run their own businesses. I mean, I do think of that as educational in nature. It happens to be education in accounting, education in business, but it's still education and it's still based on leveraging technology and personal relationships and bringing those together to give them something that is greater than the sum of its parts. So I still think that my background in education, in music education, makes a big difference in what I do.
Yeah, we're all about education at Accounting High. So as an educator, as a guest faculty, today's conversation, we're here at the guidance counselor, the guide office. We're going to talk about relationships today too, and specifically the bookkeeper and the tax preparer relationship over the years has got increasingly, I don't know how
strained.
To say it,
let's,
but
let's say strained.
They've got further apart. Yeah. Strained. Strained is good. Strained is good.
Yeah.
I was going to say taxing, but that's not. We don't want to say that.
I love it.
It's overused. But bookkeepers and tax preparers tend to look down on bookkeepers. That's true. Mean, my group of CPA friends, I'm not even a CPA, but my group of friends always looked down on the Scaling New Heights crowd mm-hmm. of the world. That's all the bookkeepers, right? Yeah. It's typically a lot of bookkeepers, and it was always CPA is more elevated. I don't see you as that. You're a CPA, but you're mixed right in with everybody. You get along with everybody. So do I. And I never really saw it like that, but tax preparers tend to always think they are right and they know better. And they know that it shouldn't be done this way. And they're off telling the bookkeepers one thing. And the bookkeepers or the cash accountants are off doing maybe accrual and doing other things. And they're doing things their way. And they're bad mouthing the accountants because the accountants mm-hmm. are hard to get a hold of and they're hard to deal with and they're too busy during tax season. And then they come and do their thing. So it's strained, let's just say the least. Why do you think that is? I mean, I just did what I thought, but why do you think that is?
There are a lot of reasons for it. I'm going to hazard a guess that communication, a lack of communication skills, is one of the biggest reasons. In the olden days, I guess we'll call it, the role of a tax accountant. And I want to clarify that not all CPAs are tax accountants, right? We're really talking about the role of a tax preparer here because you have CPAs who do audit, you have CPAs who work internally in corporate, you have CPAs who do taxes. You also have lots of people who do taxes who are not CPAs who are also looking down on the bookkeepers and the CAS accountants. So it's not just CPAs, but I do think that in general, when you see that kind of strained relationship, often you can point to challenges in communication skills as being sort of the root of that problem. I remember when I first started doing tax and started, I joined National Association of Tax Professionals, and that is a wonderful organization. And one of the things that's great about them is they don't require you to be a CPA or an EA to join. They really are equal opportunity. They do have a ton of CPAs and EAs who are members because they offer excellent education, but they don't require that. And so that was the group that after shopping around at the different IRS tax forums, not only do I love to educate, I love to learn. So I'm always going to all the conferences, and the IRS tax forums were really helpful. And the folks who were from NATP offering sessions there were always doing a great job. So I joined them and I would go to those conferences and I felt like it was really hard to network with people. It was really hard to meet people and have fun and get to know each other. It's changed somewhat through the years, but I've been at this for a while. I'm 51. This is a long time ago. And I just didn't feel a sense of camaraderie. People didn't want to, we were in competition with each other. We weren't helping each other. And that ran contrary to my values and was confusing. And then I also found from my colleagues when I would go to bigger events, for example, on behalf of a client, I went to AICPA, their main conference, which is now called Engage. I went a couple of times to that and I was really looked down on, even though I was a tax accountant, I was looked down on by CPAs for not being credentialed. So that part of it, once you take the communication part of it, that's part of it. They looked at me and it felt to me sort of like a hazing rite of passage. I went through this. You didn't go through this. Therefore, you can't be in our club. Now, it is true that it is pretty easy to evaluate at least a very basic level of education and understanding about taxes if you know that somebody is a CPA, because it is an extremely challenging set of exams. There are four different exams. You have to get a pretty high grade. I don't remember what it is, but it's like 70 or 75% to get a passing grade on each one of them. And then your credit for each section only lasts for so long before it expires. And you have to get all four of those exams done at the, like within a certain period of time in order to get your CPA.
Not to mention 150 hours of education too.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So you've got 150 hours of education, and then you've got this extremely difficult set of exams that you have to pass with very high rates and high passing grades and within a specific period of time. So you have to basically, if you're going to do it straight through like I did, you basically have to be studying nearly full time for about a year and a quarter if you're going to do this, right? It's really hard. And so I completely understand that there's a shortcut to looking at other CPAs, people who've gone through this rite of passage that you've gone through, somebody else who's gone through hell and back to make this happen. You know, I did it while I was running my firm. It was insanity. Sure. It was really, really rough.
While you were also dancing.
Yeah, I was dancing. I have my husband and my social activities and my business that I'm running. And I got a master's degree while I was at it. I thought that would be fun. It was
sure,
a lot of
why
work.
Not?
Yeah, it was
the
a
Mac
lot of
and
work.
McClellan, right? Put the Mac in McClellan.
So I have an MAFM, which is a Master's of Accounting and Financial Management. So the 150 hours was no problem for me. Like I forget that's challenging for folks because since I didn't have accounting as my undergrad.
Who was this for? Who were you getting all of these, the degrees and the CPA? Were you getting it for the people that were looking down on you?
The CPA, yeah.
So they
for
wouldn't
sure.
anymore?
My clients didn't care. Now, my master's, no. My master's,
sure.
I was very much
I'm
getting.
I'm not a CPA. My clients, they'll. Yeah.
Your clients don't care. They don't care. They call me. They
no,
would call me
no.
their CPA all the time.
Or they think of a CPA as many times as I try to. Yes.
Yeah.
They
you
do
correct
it to me
them.
Too. I mean, I'm an EA, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's.
You correct them, but they do it again the next time.
Right. Because to them, the letters CPA are synonymous with accountant.
With tax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I went back and I got my master's
you were doing
very
it.
Much for me and for my clients, because what I wanted to do was to expand. You know, we hear about expanding into advisory all the time now, but it was like not a buzzword when I was doing it. For me, I was just like, I want to help my clients run their businesses. I didn't think of myself as their accountant. I thought of myself as the person they can turn to when they have questions about business, right? So if they want to know about, let's say that there are HR things, like in Chicago, we have really complex sick leave pay rules, and we have complex rules in our county for retirement offerings that you have to have. We have sexual harassment requirements. You have to do training to identify sexual harassment if you're a small business owner. Sales tax rules, of course. We have weird things like bag tax and carbonated beverage tax. We had a sweetened beverage tax for a short period of time before it got overturned. We have so many different business-related things that you don't learn about any of this when you're getting your master's. You don't learn about any of this when you're getting your CPA. You just have to figure this out because these are the things that your clients need to know. And so that's why I went back to get my master's. They needed to know how to look at, I work with a lot of restaurants, for example. They needed to know about prime costs. I worked with retail and they need to know how to get the stuff from the point of sale system into their GL system. Like I used to work with Microsoft Great Plains and I work with QuickBooks Online now. They need to figure out how to get that information in there. And then how do you interpret that information and use it to make different decisions that same week, that next month, about hiring, about product mix, managing inventory? These were things that I wanted to learn. And I thought a master's degree would probably be the best way to do that. And I will tell you, it was fantastic for me. I will always remember the day I learned how to do a break-even analysis. And immediately I thought of a client that could totally use this. They were wedding photographers. And they wanted to know, how many weddings do I have to shoot in order to break even? And I was like, I got you. We just learned how to do this in class today. Can I use you as a guinea pig? And they were like, awesome. Go. Yeah, do it. And we figured it out. And it was a fantastic experience. So the master's was for me. It was for my clients. It was because I wanted to be a better business consultant. Then at that point, like I had all of the education that I needed to be able to sit for the CPA exam. And the CPA, that was entirely because I was tired of being looked down on by my colleagues when I would go to the tax education conferences. And I felt really uncomfortable at those conferences. I was learning a lot, but they weren't my people. I didn't think of them as my people. And it was when I went to SleaterCon for the first time. That changed everything for me. I was like, these are my people. And they were not tax accountants. Yeah. They were bookkeepers and what we now call CAS professionals. who were comfortable leveraging technology to be able to provide these services for their clients.
A lot of this is also perception, and you perceived them as looking down on you. I don't think everybody's looking down on you. Maybe there was a handful of them.
It was more than a handful. It was more than a handful. I still see it. I mean, it's one of the reasons that
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. But it's something that you let get to you.
I did.
Not necessarily something that you could have just turned the other way. And I think that's hard for me too. And I think it's hard for a lot of people because we let others kind of influence what we do. All of that being said, a lot of this has to do with becoming an advisor, and a tax preparer could do that or a bookkeeper could do that. But what you're doing is beyond both. So what you're doing for your clients are the things that we say everybody should be doing, because otherwise we're all going to get left behind. The bookkeepers and the tax preparers are doing essentially compliance. They're doing things that have to get done. What you're doing is going well above and beyond both of those. If these bookkeepers and tax preparers could mend the relationship between each other, then everybody could work towards some type of advisory services. I think both of us are primed to do it because we have clear view in the client's financials, and we're able to do that. And getting our Mac, for getting our master's is great. That's a way to get into this, but also just going beyond the basics of the relationship. But now let's talk about mending the broken bond between bookkeepers and tax preparers, because there is that sense of tax preparers looking down on bookkeepers, which we know that is a real thing. And that whole perception is real. Bookkeepers aren't going to want anything to do with tax preparers if they're doing that. And bookkeepers also sometimes look down upon certain tax preparers too.
Well, and understandably, I mean,
now that we understand that mindset,
it's something I feel super passionately about, because I can picture a really enriching future for small businesses. Now, I truly believe, as I know you do too, that small businesses are the character that builds our communities. And we need to keep them strong. We need to be able to keep our small business owners competitive against chains, because our communities really depend on having these personal relationships with people who live in our neighborhoods and are willing to take the chance on risking everything that they own in order to open a small business. To try to enrich our communities and our lives. I mean, we have a fully remote firm, in as much as there are 8 of us and we're scattered all throughout the country at times. I'm actually in Mexico. I'm not even in the country.
The world.
The world. We're scattered all throughout the world.
Beautiful background, by the way.
Thank you. Not
for
a green screen.
All of our watchers, you have a beautiful backyard. That's legit.
That's legit. I am in Mexico right now. We spend all of tax season here every year since the pandemic. But our actual client base is actually very niched within not just Chicago, but our neighborhood in Chicago, right? These are the restaurants where we go to eat. These are the places, the shops where we buy our stuff. These are the people we call on for professional services, right? These are our neighbors. This is our community. So if you feel very passionately about helping small business owners,
which is why you saw 2 of them at the park dancing.
Yes, right? Exactly.
That's why you saw 2 clients while you're at the park dancing.
That's exactly what happens. I've danced at 2 other clients at their actual businesses before, which is truly way more terrifying. I mean, I've been on stage with like hundreds and hundreds of people in the audience, and it's nothing compared to dancing in front of your own clients and hoping that they respect you in the morning, I guess. I don't know. But anyway.
Ooh,
yeah.
That's a whole other conversation. Sorry for interrupting. Sorry for derailing.
Well, they know I have a colorful personality, so it's not too surprising when they watch me dance. But boy, we wear some crazy costumes. So, but anyway, if you want to keep these communities vibrant, which I know you do and I do, and most of the bookkeepers that I work with feel very much that way. They feel very involved in the day-to-day of their clients' activities. And that's not necessarily what happens with the tax preparers, because Traditionally, and this is changing, but traditionally, tax preparers had a once a year touch point with the clients, right? Once a year, unless your client gets a notice in the mail from the IRS or the state, you're really just talking to them once a year. So it's the bookkeepers who have the high touch points and have built these personal relationships. So it makes sense to me that if things are set up that way, that there's going to be tension because the bookkeeper has a lot of knowledge about what's going on within the client's books. They know what the client's hopes and goals and dreams are. The CPA or EA or tax preparer is coming in once a year to do what's essentially compliance, as you pointed out earlier. I'm seeing this change for a lot of reasons. One is we're able to leverage technology to help us in a lot of different ways to turn what we're doing once a year into something that can be a quarterly or monthly conversation about tax planning with the client, right? So I am starting to see this change, but you know, we're an industry that generally is slow to change. So it's taking a while. And so it makes sense when you've got people who are mm-hmm. just one touch point a year versus people who are 12 or more, that they are not talking about the same things. They're not looking at the same things. And we've got one of these groups, the one touch point a year with a ton of education and knowledge, but very few communication skills and generally speaking, not a lot of great tech skills. Whereas the bookkeepers who have the 12 or more touch points per year tend to have better communication skills, and they tend to have, at least the bookkeepers that we see at Scaling New Heights and QuickBooks Connect and Bridging the Gap and Hector Garcia's conference and all of these amazing conferences out there, they tend to be really comfortable with technology as well. So they're not speaking the same language. They don't have the same relationship with the client. It's a recipe for there to be tension unless both sides learn how to communicate with each other. So bookkeepers need to, in my opinion, level up their bookkeeping skills so that they are presenting the books in a way that's going to make sense to the person who eventually is going to have to use those books to prepare a tax return. And simultaneously, we need the tax preparers to recognize that the bookkeeper is the one who is uniquely positioned in their relationship with the client and in the fact that they're in the books regularly. The bookkeeper is uniquely positioned to actually take care of some of the things that we would sometimes think of as, oh, the tax accountant will do that, like reasonable compensation. When you're doing the tax return, it's too late to adjust reasonable compensation for the prior year by definition, right? Your W-2 has already been Absolutely. Issued.
Yeah.
Whereas the bookkeeper is perfectly positioned for that. They can look throughout the course of the year and they can go, huh, this is an S-corp. And the owner is spending an awful lot of time working in the business and they're not on W-2. They're not taking payroll, or they're taking very small payroll, or they're taking lots of distributions, or they're running lots of personal costs through the business. The bookkeeper is in the perfect position to be able to see that. And if they have the education, not to do taxes, but to know what a tax preparer might look for. And actually, on the topic of reasonable compensation, there already aren't enough tax preparers looking at that either. So that's another problem that we can talk about some other day. But that's just one of many examples of where a bookkeeper is beautifully positioned. And I think that if bookkeepers can learn what it is that tax preparers need for bookkeepers to be doing well in the books. I mean, I'm uniquely positioned to be able to know these things because our firm does bookkeeping and tax. I do them both. And we do advisory. We've got the whole arc, the whole scope of services that we offer.
You got the trifecta.
Yeah. So we've been able to see what do we want to do on a monthly basis with our clients so that when our tax team is taking these books and doing the annual tax return or doing the quarterly tax planning that we offer to all of our clients, what are they going to complain about? What is, in very specific terms, what is Julie going to say Sarah should have done? And Sarah wants to know ahead of time what Julie's going to say so that Sarah can be doing a better job on a monthly basis. And part of that is opening up the lines of communication between the Julies, the tax people, and the Sarahs, the bookkeepers. They need to be working with each other, have open lines of communication. The tax preparer, in an ideal situation, will help the bookkeeper decide what the monthly close should contain. For example, are we going to review for reasonable compensation on a monthly basis? Are we going to, when there are special weird rules like you can deduct 100% of meals at restaurants and 50% of meals at non-restaurants for those couple of years that we had that, are the bookkeepers going to be able to review for that on a monthly basis so that there's not a big cleanup job or a ton of research to get done? The $25 limitation on gifts per person, that's something that the bookkeeper can be looking at on a monthly basis. I mean, the list goes on. I have an extremely long list of things that the bookkeeper can be doing now that is going to earn them respect in the eyes of the tax preparer, because they are saving that tax preparer a lot of headache during an extremely stressful time of year. So I do think that that's one of the things that can help earn them that respect.
So what you're proposing is, in order to bridge the gap between the bookkeepers and the tax preparers, we need better communication, because essentially we're all speaking the language of business, finance language of business. Mm-hmm. We still just need a better translator. Like, they're coming at it from different places.
I totally agree.
And maybe they are speaking different languages. The tax preparers are speaking a different language than the bookkeepers. So how do we bridge that
overlap
with better communication?
There's more overlap. There's more overlap than we think, Scott. I mean, there really is. And I think that part of it is education. I think part of it's communication. I think part of it is that we're going to be seeing turnover in a generation of tax preparers, of people who are more progressive about the use of technology, for example. And I think that's going to help. But I think the biggest
technology increases the communication.
It does. It absolutely does. And where I'm really seeing it, though, where I'm already starting to see this confluence, is in CAS services. And I joke about it because I like to call it CAS services because it's client accounting and advisory services. It's both. And we're seeing tax preparers, some more progressive tax preparers, moving into the CAS arena. And we're seeing some more confident bookkeepers moving into that arena. And if they can meet and share the load, that would be an ideal situation. If we share technology, maybe you've got client Slack channel that you bring the tax preparer in on, or the tax preparer shares some of the technology that they're using with the bookkeeper. For example, we shared when we created our review list of questions that our CPA will look at the books and say, okay, here are all the things that I'm looking for. If we could take that and invert it so that the junior accountants, the bookkeeping team, they're taking this list and saying, I'm going to take care of this stuff on a monthly basis. And then I'm going to do a first pass after the beginning of through the year end close. And I'm going to go through everything that I can take care of and then hand it off to a senior. The senior looks at it. If there are any weird things that have to be reconciled or dealt with, or the funky stuff that was more complex or didn't get caught or turns into a project, they can handle that. And then they are communicating directly with the tax preparer. The tax preparer doesn't have to do that review anymore before they do the tax return, because we've got this fantastic document that has the entire history of everything that's already happened. And so they can say, oh, look, they've already identified gifts, or they've already handled reasonable compensation, or all of these things that we were just talking about. They've already looked at officer insurance, for example, key man insurance, and they've got that bumped out into a separate line item in the chart of accounts. So many of these things, we've already taken care of that. Now, in our company, we can do that internally, right? But I do not think that has to be done internally. I think co-firming is a great way to handle it, where
Ooh, co-firming.
Yeah, co-firming. Yeah, you've had some people on the on the pod who are like big proponents of that, right? Yeah.
Big co-firmers.
Yeah. So I think co-firming is a great way to handle it. It is the most formal of the approaches that you can take, where for anybody who's listening who doesn't know what that is, you, in this situation, you would take a tax preparer company, tax preparation company, and you would take a bookkeeping company, and those two firms would co-firm. They would either bill everything out through the bookkeeping firm or bill everything out to the client through the tax firm. Sometimes there are two separate bills that can happen, but it is a formal agreement where you say, we are working together. We are sharing technology. We are sharing clients. We are sharing systems and processes. And that is a really fabulous way to handle it. But that's not the only way to handle it. You can create positive experiences, and you know, you can reach out to each other, whether it's on the side of the tax preparer or the side of the bookkeeper, saying, hey, I want to better serve the client. I know that's your goal as well. What can we do? Here are some ideas I have, and have a brainstorming session. And the ones who are treating you better as the bookkeeper, you know, the ones who are treating you with more respect, ask if they're looking for new clients, you know, and establish a relationship with them. And ask them if they're looking for a proactive bookkeeper for their other tax clients. And the ones that you don't get along with as well, keep trying. Sometimes it takes a while for us to change. We're set in our ways. The CPA exam's been around a long time.
Caught people on a bad year.
Well,
sometimes you caught people on a bad day, a bad year.
Let's talk about compassion for a second, though, because I do think that one of the reasons that we can see problems with CPAs not liking bookkeepers is if bookkeepers aren't delivering a beautiful package with a bow on top of the books at tax time, that is the worst possible time for a CPA to have to do any cleanup work, right? It is, I cannot possibly communicate how challenging tax season, especially these past 6 years, have been. I think the complexity in taxes and tax adjacent work that CPAs are expected to do, CPAs and other tax preparers, is about three times as complex as it was 6 years ago. So if you can hand off a pretty package with a bow on top, you are going to make their lives so much easier. They're going to be more inclined to work with you in the future. And if you can pull some of that into the off season, it's even better. Ask on a monthly or quarterly basis, say, hey, shared Google Doc. It could be as simple as that. It doesn't, if you have a Slack space, that's fantastic. But if you don't, shared Google Doc for each client. And these are the questions that I come up with on my monthly review and that I have for you, tax preparer, and then ping them, shoot them an email, send them a link to it and say, hey, let's make this a living, breathing document. Help me. Write back on it. If you don't want to have a Zoom with me, that's okay. We can communicate on the doc. That's another way to do it. There are a lot of different ways to do it, but it begins with reaching out to each other and finding out what each other's pain points are. And yeah, having compassion for tax preparers during a really, really, really difficult time of year. If that's the first time that you're reaching out to them to say you've seen a problem with something, it's not going to earn you any points. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So let's also look at perception versus reality. I know that was another topic that we were going to touch on today. I don't think we're going to solve the world's problems with bookkeepers and tax preparers, but I do think that this other side of the conversation too can also help. Perception versus reality. Let's go back to the conversation of you got your CPA because you thought people were looking down on you, right?
Yep.
And that how that made you feel. It, for me, like, I've always felt like I was adjacent to everything. I've always felt like an outcast in the world. I've always done things very differently, and I used to see that as a negative. It was only until I turned it into a positive that it started to benefit me, because it hurt me in most of my life. But it wasn't until I saw it as being different as an advantage and thinking differently as an advantage that I was able to come out and
excited when we first met each other, Scott. This was why I was so excited, because I have struggled with that my whole life. Hearing that we both went through momentous changes in our lives that helped us realize dreams
you teased
that
the story.
I did tease the story. I'm gonna keep doing that. we both went through these momentous, these experiences in our lives that made us go, ugh, I want to do this thing that I want to follow my dream. But also that the thing that we picked is a weird thing for somebody in our field to be doing. And, or at least we thought it was a weird thing, right? We felt like outsiders. We felt like we were weirdos.
Perception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, perception versus reality. And one of the things I loved about the Bridging the Gap conference that Randy put on is that I met a lot of other people who were a lot like me, all these unicorns in a room together. And you were one of those unicorns.
I don't think we're unicorns. The more and more I talk to people, the more and more I meet people, I realize we're all the same. But most people choose to keep that buried. Mm-hmm. Most people choose to keep that inside and they don't express who they really are.
And yeah, it's like John Garrett's book and podcast,
they would
What's
be
Your
different
And?
Too.
Mm, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, John Garrett's been touching on this for a while.
Scotty, I was his very first guest, his very first podcast. Did you know that?
Oof. I might end up being his last guest because I still haven't been on his show. So I'm going to have to schedule that. He talked about you. He talked about you on my show. When he came on, he talked about the dancing accountant. He mentioned you. So now we actually have you on.
This is amazing. God, I love that. I didn't realize I have to go back
now
and listen
to
his
episode.
Now I remember
him mentioning that. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love him. But yeah, so to go back to what you were saying, what's your and? You're seeing it more often.
He actually said you by name too. I think he gave you a shout out.
Aw, I love you, John. Thank you. He's so great. And I love, love, love his message, though, in the way that I want to help work. I want to do more consulting with bookkeepers to help them learn how to communicate with CPAs and vice versa. I feel like John has helped everybody, not just in accounting, but he has helped everybody in the business world really learn that bringing out your and is actually a good thing, and help the leaders of firms realize that encouraging your staff to bring out their and is a good thing, and that it actually brings us closer together.
It does. It does. So I'm back to like the whole, I'll start telling my story a little bit. So it was like in the back of my mind that I was going to be turning 40 soon. I don't think that was why, but it occurred to me as you were telling your story, that was pretty much it. Cause I just turned 40 a couple months ago.
Good birthday.
I definitely got the rap thing off the ground before 40. Thank you.
Yeah,
I got it off the ground before that. And it was a subconscious thing that was driving me because I had always wanted to be a rapper, an entertainer, and all of those things. But you got to make money first. I mean, like I got into some trouble at a young age. But then I started doing the work and doing the accounting and all of that. And you get sucked in. And that was it. That was my whole life, was making more money and growing my firm and this and this. And I spent 80 hours a week just doing that. And it wasn't until I woke up during COVID, when I was stranded in Mexico. Now I'm alluding to your story too.
Yes.
When I was stuck in Mexico during COVID was when I really decided, now I'm going to do a podcast. And the podcast led to the rap stuff. And this was, as we all know, 2020 that happened. And now we're into 20. So this was like 3 years ago. And one thing led to another. And it led to me being me and authentically. And now I'm that my most authentic self anywhere in public and anywhere, and it's comfortable and it's easy to do. It was hard in the beginning because, again, like that whole perception of being different is not right, and you got to be like everybody else so you can be accepted by everybody else. And I think that's a generational mindset, definitely a generational mindset that people grew up thinking you had to be somebody different at work than you were at home.
Yes, yes. And so I see that changing a lot, which is super exciting. But I also think that when we get involved in our and, as John Garrett would say, me with my dancing and you with your rap, I think it teaches us something about ourselves that is so much bigger than the person we are at work or our hobbies. It is much bigger than that. My greatest lesson at work and in performance was something that I got from dance. I was absolutely terrified when I first started performing because I thought, oh, what are people going to think? People are going to think that she just likes to dress up in silly costumes, which I do love to dress up in silly costumes. But now I'm finding out that lots of other people also like to dress up in silly costumes. It's the best. It's so much fun. And so I'm like, they're going to think this, or they're going to think that, or they're going to think I'm too old. They're going to think I'm whatever I thought people would think. And
how many costumes were at Bridging the Gap?
Oh my gosh, the costumes at Bridging the Gap were gold.
There was a ton.
Did you see my?
They were the best.
Literally gold lame. Oh no, I had gold sequins there instead of lame.
You and Gaynor, I remember that picture. I just saw that the other day. Yeah.
So good. So good. Oh, you should see the one of Nio and me. Nio and I definitely was good. Anyway.
Rock the house.
So we did. We did. Oh, and Blake. Sorry. Oh my gosh. With the hat and the green and the, we had some great pictures. God.
I remember Blake dancing was hilarious.
That was great. Was the best. It was so good. So
I had my red, I debuted my red jumpsuit.
Oh, that's right. You had the red jumpsuit on. I totally remember that. Yeah. Oh, God, I love costumes. They're so good. Yeah, people are always amazed when they'll see. We were staying with friends between QuickBooks Connect and Digital CPA, and I was unpacking, and I brought out a purple wig, which I wore to the Melio purple party, and I had a black feather boa, and I had black sequin pants and black sequin armbands and a gold. And they were like, wait, what? Did you bring all that for us, like for this trip, for this visit? I'm like, no. That's my conference clothing.
Accounting conference clothing.
An accounting conference? Yeah, but it's true. Oh my gosh, we have so much fun. Anyway, so another dancer, Laurel, she to me was just so amazing. She's my same age and she'd been doing this a lot longer, and she just seemed so comfortable in her skin and so confident. And I know people think I'm confident, and I am in certain areas, but it's really what I learned from her. I said, oh my gosh, you're so amazing. I want to be just like you. You're completely fearless. And she said, oh no. I am just as scared as the next person. The difference is that I do it anyway. How good is that? Is that you when you get up on stage and you rap?
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm terrified every time.
Perception every versus time reality, Scott.
I'm sweating. I never want to run away and not do it. Like that's not what's going through my head.
Right.
I'm not afraid that I'm going to do terrible and I'm going to fall on my face.
Okay.
It's,
what is it?
I really want to do well. I really want to do well, and I really want to do better than the last time. And I put a lot of pressure on myself, and it scares the hell out of me too, because I have a severe anxiety, and like it's almost like a panic attack in reverse. It's like excitement, and it's really amped up, and I can turn that anxiety into excitement.
That's
at the turn
something
of switch,
I learned,
especially right when it's time.
I learned that from Misty Mejia. She talks about how the physiological reaction to negative stress and the physiological reaction to positive stress are actually the same physiological reaction. So a lot of it is just about cognitive behavioral therapy and reframing that and saying, oh, hey, I have sweaty palms. I'm shaking. I'm stuttering. That's because I'm so excited. Not just that's because I'm so nervous. It works.
Yeah. It's reframing it in your head. I did my TOPS class back January last year.
Oh, good.
Last year.
I'm going to be taking it. Yeah. I'm going to be taking it starting this spring.
Oh yeah. It's great. And but everybody's perception is, and I learned this from Greg Kite. I was talking to him before he went on stage, and I said, are you ever not nervous before you go on? And he's like, I think if I wasn't nervous, I would stop doing it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it anymore. It wouldn't be, it's not exciting me.
Yeah.
Like it, and it's not stimulating me. That I took to heart. That I was like, oh wow, okay. Me feeling nervous about even doing it in the first place, I'm going to be feeling the same way if I actually was doing it. Cause by the time when I was talking to him, I hadn't even done it yet. So
oh, really?
That was one of the things that that was one of the things where I'm like, well, if I'm going to be nervous doing it anyway, I might as well just do it. Cause at that point it was like, and one thing, again, always one thing leads to another. I'm already working with editing and mics, and I'm like, and I worked maybe 6 or 7 months on that first rap before I even did anything in front of anybody. And the first time I ever did anything in front of anybody was, and I can thank Twyla for this, was Fresh Pack. Mm-hmm. At the Fresh Pack on a boat in Toronto. I was going to say last year, but it was 2022.
Which is funny because On a Boat is one of my favorite raps ever from SNL. I love it so much. I got my nautical theme pashmina.
There's some explicits on there too that we could get into, but that was a great one. Oh no, there's another one. That's the other one in a box. That's the one I'm thinking
of. Oh, that's an explicit in a box. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the boat one, that was great.
I love
T-Pain
one.
Was on the boat.
Yeah, T-Pain.
Yeah, yeah, this is dope.
Good one.
But yeah, like, and it's always going to be like, I get nervous before every recording of this show, and I'm just in front of the next person.
Wow.
Like, I'm just nervous that it's not going to go well. Or
you're not nervous talking
to
me, though, right?
Always. Every time. Every time I record, if I want it to go well, if I'm not nervous, the only two times I was not nervous was I didn't know the guest and I didn't care for the outcome. And I just recorded.
Got it.
Like, I didn't know him and I was just doing it because somebody else told me I should. It was like, it wasn't something that I really felt like doing myself anyway. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I'm doing something for somebody else, I don't really care that much about the outcome, I guess. Not a great way to be, but that's just what it is.
It just is.
Yeah.
You don't have to place judgment on that. I'm proud of you.
Oh, well, thank you, Nancy. I'm proud of you. You've showed me through no connection at all. We have a ton of similarities.
So cool.
Now, can we end it with your story of Mexico as well?
Yeah.
Because same thing happened to me. And this is how I ended up actually, that was my gateway to doing all of the things that I'm doing now.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was your gateway to living this life. Let's hear it.
Yeah. So I have seasonal affective disorder, which means that it's a kind of depression that is entirely created by when the days get shorter and darker and drizzly. And so I would get depressed and low energy during those times. Well, that also in Chicago, that is tax season. And so many years ago, I think about my husband said, this is silly. You speak Spanish. Why don't you take the 2 or 3 weeks that are after you're done having in-person meetings with clients? Because back then I still did in-person pretty frequently. And my team, again, fully remote, but with the clients, it was in person. He said, when you're done working with your clients,
hyper-local. Yeah.
Yep. Hyper-local. So, you know, we're meeting at their restaurants, at their stores, et cetera, and so on. And so when you're done with that and you hit that March 15th escort partnership deadline, then go down to Mexico and spend the next 2 or 3 weeks working like crazy in your laptop, your 12-hour days, 7 days a week, trying to get better about that. That's what it looked like then. And he's like, but you'll be sitting in the sun. I have this amazing case. It's a carrying case for my laptop, but you pop it open and the sides come out and the top comes out and there's Velcro and it makes a little box, like a shadow box that you can slide your laptop in. So I could sit outside all day long with my little battery pack with my laptop shaded from the sun. I
can
sit outside. No glare. It's wonderful. And it protects it from the heat. And so he said, why don't you just do that? So I started doing that and it was life-changing because I had, when I needed energy and focus the most is when I had it because I was down there and in the sun and it was just, it was great. And then I had medical issues.
You got energy from the ultimate source.
From the ultimate source, the original, the original source of the energy. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
the original energy.
Yeah, yeah. At least for our solar system. So then what happened was I had medical issues in 2017, and which meant that it was after scaling New Heights in 2017. So in 2018, we couldn't travel. 2019, my husband started coming with me so that I could manage. He does a lot of my physical therapy for me. And so he's learned about all of this stuff. So, and he's remote also. And so we started traveling together to do this. Well, thank goodness we did, because in March of 2020, we were down here in Mérida, which is the capital of Yucatan, about 4 hours west of Cancun in the peninsula, not on the coast. It's a city about the size of Milwaukee, but shorter because it's colonial and very, very friendly culture. The Mayan culture is centered in this area. And we were here together and a pandemic broke out. Who knew? And at first we couldn't get back home. And then we didn't want to go back home because it was not being handled as well in the United States by our measure as it was in, there were 3 or 4 states in Mexico that did a really excellent job, including Mauvila, who is our governor here in Yucatan. And he's just done a wonderful job. They all took it very seriously, very focused on community and keeping each other healthy. And wow, we were so impressed. And 2.5 weeks with 2 carry-on bags turned into 16 months. We were here for 16 months and we became residents. We've got our residency cards. And so since then, we've come back every year during tax season. And this year, I'm very proud to say we finally bought a place. And so this is my home.
16 months. My story was 16 weeks.
Oh my goodness. Well, 16
weeks,
still
I thought was
similar.
A lot. I've been sharing that story for a while. Yeah. But 16 months, which, it's.
I mean, again, I'm going two carry-on bags, right? Two carry-on bags.
But you learn that you don't need as much.
That's exactly what we learned. It's exactly what
you may not have had
learned.
Your sequin dresses and stuff, but you don't need that much.
Also, they have Amazon here. You can buy sequin dresses online, and I did.
And you did.
I did. I totally did. I bought a sequin dress. I bought
Uber
one
there
sequin
now,
dress,
too.
And right. I did a – yeah, they do also – I bought one sequin dress and I bought one shiny pink leotard with black and white stripes on it. And that's, I would do my go-go classes online. And I also dance with a marching band. We're like a glam marching band. And so, yeah, we kept all of those up online. It was fantastic. But I needed the costumes. I mean, come on. I'm not a barbarian.
Oh, I love it. Nancy, thank you for teaching our students here at Accounting High, teaching us to be better communicators. We all need to become better communicators, bookkeepers and tax preparers alike. Let's bridge the relationship between us. Thank you.
Thank you so much,
and
Scotty, for having me on the show.
I'm going to ride us out with your theme song here. Class dismissed.
To our class, it's the guide, please take a seat. Step into this unique guidance session, navigate with me. It's the capital S, oh yes, I'm fresh, C-double-O-T. Y apostrophe, OKR apostrophe, you see. The show is intended to guide you with advice. Vision goals on mission, it's time Accounting High. Yeah, this profession, I think they in the mood for some fun and inspiration.
Hell
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, what up, Scott? Gotta lead with ambition.
What's that, greed?
Gotta grab your attention.
Intention?
And it's gotta be abundant.
Public accountants
in unexpected places, we ask for your attention. Conversations about the state of the profession. Emotional intelligence, atomic habits in a bundle. Infinite game, Rye Holiday, we stay humble. Find your purpose in class with tech apps. Jedi mindsets, James Ash has got your back. For Hells to discuss her vision for the profession. Evolution conversation with Jeff Wilson II. And I'ma continue to put the rap down with impact now. And if you're active listening, mind the imagination gap now. Yeah, Janitor Scott coming to you live from the closet with a bucket and a mop. So find a cozy spot, we all want financial freedom. ACCOUNTINGHIGH. Preach, putting this course together. Sit back, relax, open your mind, class is in session.
Guidance class at Accounting High. It's guidance class at Accounting High, and it's guidance
Monday in Accounting High show.
So tune in to the next episode.